Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Ciao, Rank Squad. Today, we are flipping things over to perhaps the most competitive league in Europe this season in the form of Serie A, where chaos has ruled over the course of the summer. No less than 14 of the 20 clubs in the division changed managers, including seven of last season's top 10, and only the Premier League spent more than the Italian top flight in this transfer window. My name's Jack Collins, and I'm joined across the water by a man who has loved the rebirth of Calcio over the past few years. Live from San Diego, it's our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I mean, it's been basically since we were at Bleacher and the AC Milan resurgence began. I reckon that's about the time when I properly had my head turned and got back into the Italian football scene. And I've enjoyed it. It's just so yo-yo, isn't it? I mean, in terms of what you get season to season, who's going to be the dominant team, how far off you fall, in terms of a team like Napoli, who obviously won the league 1 minute by a long distance, and then the following season just come nowhere near it and finished 10th in the league. So there's this kind of, an expectation of a proper title race, but caution about who's actually going to be in that title race and whether they can continue the momentum of the season before. So it'll be interesting to see your views. I mean, you love Italian football probably more than anyone I've actually met in my life, to be honest, mate. So I'm intrigued to hear your hot takes along the way here.
Yeah, I mean, what's really interesting about it at the moment, I think it's very much the most competitive league that Europe has to offer, right? And we're discussing it in a way that, you know, no one has kept hold of a title. No one has won back-to-back titles since Juventus's long run of dominance was ended. Obviously, Inter have won it twice in that five-year period, but it's changed hands on numerous occasions. It's really, really exciting time to be enjoying Serie A. So we're going to talk about lots of different things today. We're going to talk about a title race. We're going to talk about the European race, talk about some of the relegation candidates and do a couple of quick fire questions at the end. But we're going to start things off with the Scudetto and the teams that are competing to have it. And I think it only makes sense to start with the reigning champions, Inter. We've just said that no one has retained a title for some time in Serie A. But I do feel like if anyone's got that shot, it feels like Inter this year. They've started off 2 wins and a draw. Their goal difference is +6. They drew with Genoa 2-2 in the first game. They won 2-0 against Lecce in the second. And then on Friday night, they beat Atalanta 4-0 in the most dominant performance of the season so far. And I find it very interesting, you know, what they've been doing across the course of this window. We saw a couple of sort of old timers leave. Juan Cuadrado left, Alexis Sanchez left, and Davy Klaassen left. But they've been quite quiet in the window. They brought in Josep Martinez as a goalkeeper, as someone to back up and potentially be the successor to Jan Sommer. They brought in Piotr Zielinski on a free transfer from Napoli, and they brought in Mehdi Taremi on a free transfer from Porto as well. Late on the window, they also brought in Thomas Palacios from South America. So not too much change at Inter, Dean. And it feels like with Inzaghi signing a new contract, that was the big bit of the summer. It feels like they're in a very, very secure place. And that might be the key to them actually going on and retaining this title.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of like teams having some continuity, Inter Milan have had it in the sense that they've still managed to remain competitive. So even if you were to doubt them before they went on to win Serie A, they were still starting to come. They were already back in the conversation after Juve's dominance, obviously. And then obviously they've been in finals. They've gone to all the way in the Champions League and come very close. So there's got to be more hope for Inter Milan of actually retaining a title, because it has been a while now that they have been at the very top of the elite game across Europe, not even just in Italy. So I think that that changes how we view a team like this. And it's obviously very important that you set off on the right foot. I mean, last season, they won the league by 19 points. So it was a resounding win, and it was all clinched early. So it was a nice situation to be in. But it's then about, are you able to continue that into the new season? And when you're unbeaten after three games, you're obviously setting off, sending out the right messages again. And it's important that they've been able to do that, because obviously Juventus have revitalized this season and will feel that they can take this crown away from Inter Milan. But the early signs, I think, are very, very strong for Inter. They're a smart team. They're a smart team tactically as individuals, but also as a team. And I think that that's why you continue to have faith and confidence in them, because they've got a way of playing that is continuing to evolve, and they've also got big goal power.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Lautaro had a cracking Copa America. He top scored at the competition. He scored the winner in the final as Argentina beat Colombia in that competition. But you look at the spine of this team, right? Jan Sommer came in and won the European Golden Glove last year. We talk about Bastoni as one of the best centre-backs in Europe, never mind in Serie A. We talk about Calhanoglu as, you know, he's gone out and said that he thinks he's probably the best number six in the game. I think that Rodri might have something to say about that. But, you know, barring that, you're definitely having him in that next bracket of players down. You talk about Barella as potentially the most underrated player in world football and maybe one of the best centre midfielders across the planet. Very much be in my top five in there. And then Lautaro leading the line and Marcus Thuram starting the season well. Last year, I thought they lacked a bit of depth. But with Zielinski coming in there to kind of shift things around, and you know, he will have one eye on that role held by Henrik Mkhitaryan, I think, in the midfield. Taremi offers something different in terms of a striking option and allows them to mix and match it a little bit more up there, big man, little man, all that kind of thing. It just feels like they've signed really sensibly across the course of the summer without, you know, breaking up what was a winning formula. And that depth, I think, might allow them to challenge quite sharply on the European front as well as on the kind of domestic one.
Yeah, exactly that. And yeah, I think that anytime you watch Inter, as I say, you just have that degree of confidence about them actually going and getting important wins. I mean, 4-0 over Atalanta is quite a statement a few games into a season.
Yeah.
Thuram obviously weighs in with two, and he's now top goal scorer in the league at this stage. But Barella too, as you say, like absolute dynamo in there. Still, I think, probably doesn't get the appreciation globally that you would expect a player of this quality to get. I don't know why. I don't know why it is that. In fact, Inter Milan as a whole, their players just miss the radar a lot of the time for like being considered as the best of the best. And maybe that helps them, to be honest. Like maybe that even helps them retain these players year on year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, I think they come into this as obvious favourites. And, you know, in a year of massive upheaval, that stability might just be enough to see them over the line on its own. But it's also going to be interesting to see who comes out as title challengers. And I want to move it on now away from Inter to a couple of other teams. And I wanted to start with Juventus, because they've had a cracking start to the season under Thiago Motta, who replaced Max Allegri. They won 3-0 in their opener against Como. Then they won 3-0 against Verona. And then they drew 0-0 against Roma in what was their first real test, but a game that they still probably had the better of. And if anyone was going to go and win that game, it felt like it was going to be Juve. They sit pretty much level, bang on, with Inter at the top of the table, played 3-1-2, drawn 1, plus 6 goal difference. And it's been a really, really, really busy summer. So we saw a massive clear out of not just the old guard, the likes of Adrian Rabiot, Daniele Rugani, Federico Chiesa, who's been there for a while, Wojciech Szczesny, ended up retiring from football, Alexandro, but also some of the youngsters that they clearly didn't feel were either up to it or that they felt were able to provide the financial capital for them to have a complete reset. So Matias Sule went out, Dean Huijsen, who was on loan at Roma last year, Samuel Eiling Jr. was used as a make-weight in a deal alongside Barnechea, Fabio Moretti's gone out on loan, Moise Kean, someone who's been in and out of the club a couple of times, he's off as well. And Thiago Giallo was seen as surplus to requirements. In their place, we've seen a lot of names come in. Douglas Luiz from Aston Villa, Kefren Turam, who came in, French international, son of Lilian Turam, who obviously played for the club. Juan Cabal, who came in from Serie A. Nico Gonzalez has made the jump across from Fiorentina after being their best player for some time. Chico Conceição, all the way from Porto. Michele Di Gregorio came in from Monza after really shining as their goalkeeper. Pierre Kalulu was excellent in Milan. And Teun Koopmeiners, who was probably the only person you'd put up there to challenge Barella as the best centre midfielder in Serie A last year. That's a hell of a window, Dean, not just in terms of the names that have been brought in, but in terms of clearing out the decks and allowing Motta to have free reign over what he wants at the club at this point.
It is, yeah. And obviously, having Thiago Motta in there will give Juve fans a new sense of confidence about what can be achieved and how watchable it will be across the way. There has to be some doubt, though, about how well the first season can go in terms of whether they truly can challenge into this quickly with a new look team, with a new coach, with a new style of play, and with Champions League football at the same time. Like, how's Motta going to balance all this out? I think that that's probably the big question for me. You look back at Juve across the past couple of seasons when they haven't been easy on the eye and they haven't been very convincing. They did manage to actually, well, they managed to put together some decent runs somehow, whether it was just putting off some 1-0s in a row or whatever it might have been. But they would ultimately fall away and you would be, this cannot work. And in the end, they had to give up on Allegri because of that. It was boring, it was dull. And if you're not even getting the results on the back of that, it can't be continued. But Motta changes everything because he doesn't play the same style of football. He doesn't even have the same mindset as what Juve have had for the past few years. Mm-hmm. He wants to be more forward thinking in pretty much every respect. And so that's great, but there's going to be some difficulties along the way as you try to implement all of this. And that's why I would slightly be concerned that there will be blips along the way for Juve as they kind of come to terms with this. And that might be what costs them in terms of actually trying to take the Scudetto away from Inter this season. Obviously, they've had a good start to the campaign, and I don't want to take away from that because I've been much enjoyed watching them, and I feel certainly more optimistic about what we're going to see. But I really don't know that I can see them putting all this together straight away and like taking the title. That would be unbelievable achievement from Motta. And it's kind of like, how much do you expect this soon? Is it okay to just come second and have a good Champions League run? Do you just dismiss the Champions League and focus on domestic action? There's all this balance for Motta. This is his first like major job in coaching at an elite level. He's obviously like highly regarded already in Serie A, but now he too is stepping up a level and he's doing it with this new team at the same time. And obviously a lot of the changes he's made are in the midfield, which is a very complicated area to try and fix quickly.
True, but if you're going to bring in players of this kind of quality, you expect them to kind of hit the ground running. Dougie Luiz was brilliant for Aston Villa last season. Teun Koopmeiners is absolutely sensational as Atalanta ended up winning the Europa League. And Kefren Turam has been someone that's been touted as, you know, one of the preeminent kind of defensive midfielders coming through across the world. And you look at the players that have gone out in that regard, and the likes of Adrian Rabiot, who's somehow been clinging on by his fingernails for about 4 years, it feels. It does feel like Juventus have a freshness about them and a dynamism around them that has been lacking, I think. And there is serious quality that's been added. And actually, in terms of players who've been there and done it in Serie A, you know, Michele Di Gregorio, as we say, part of that Monza run that allowed them to, you know, surprise almost everybody. Kalulu was really, really impressive for Milan in spells, I think, alongside either Malik Chow or Smori. And then you kind of look at Nico Gonzalez, who, as I say, that will hurt everyone in Florence because that was a big loss. And to lose another player to Juve after losing Vlahovic and Chiesa is going to be something that stings there. But they're looking at players who have already kind of shown they can do it. Juan Cabal as well at Verona, really, really impressive. So there are players here who should be able to hit the ground running. They're not going to be surprised by the pace or the technical ability or the quality of the league. There's a couple of others who you're kind of looking at and thinking they should be able to make this jump quite sensibly. And I suppose the only question really for me is Juventus's depth. if Vlahovic gets injured, do they have someone ready and able to take over in that centre forward role? I can't see it from the squad that you're kind of looking at. A couple of players can play in there. We could see Kenan Yeldiz play in that area, but I think we've seen that Thiago Motta wants to play him in the 10 role when he can. He's been given the 10 shirt. It's a big responsibility for the young Turkish international. Nico Gonzalez can play as a 9, but I don't really like it. Same with Chico Conceição. I think they're a little bit light there, and I think they're a little light centre-back if someone like Bremer gets injured, because they will lose the basis of which this defence is built. But look, so far so good, and I'm excited to see what Thiago Motta can do with this side.
Yeah, and while I say like Motta's trying to overhaul pretty much everything, the one thing he's retained is at least a sense of resilience about Juve, which is what, you know, typically you get from an Italian side who's going to go on and win a title, is that they're going to be defensively resolute. And I mean, this is a Juve team 3 games into the season that not only haven't conceded a goal, but haven't really given up too many big chances. Yeah. And I think that that's one of the keys too, is like, not only is he going to make this team easier on the eye, not only will it be more fluid, not only should we see a better version of Vlahovic unlocked because of the players that are going to be around him, but that back line is looking locked right now. And that is a promising aspect of their play as they build towards the title.
Yeah, 100%. And the youth getting an opportunity as well. We've seen Mbangula, we've seen Cambiasso, we've seen Savona. A lot of players been given that opportunity as well. I think that's something that we'll see kind of develop over the course of the year. I want to take us on to Napoli, who are potentially a surprise inclusion in this first pit about title contenders. But I don't think you can dismiss the idea that Antonio Conte comes into clubs, especially when he doesn't have to play European football, and he wins leagues. And it's what we've seen so many times. We saw it at Juventus, we saw it at Chelsea, both off the back of difficult seasons the year before. We saw him come in at Inter and win the title. Whilst they were in Europe, they got knocked out before Christmas. And look, 2 weeks ago, everyone was panicking because they lost their first game 3-0 to Verona. And everyone was like, oh God, this could be an absolute nightmare. But since then, they've won 3-0 against Bologna in a very, very impressive performance. And then they dug it out deep to win 2-1 late on against Parma this weekend.
Late on is probably, not doing it justice. 92nd minute and 96th minute.
Yeah, I mean, look, they found a way, but they've had an interesting window as well, right? Alessandro Buongiorno coming in, David Neres coming in, Rafa Marin coming in on loan from Real Madrid last season, did really, really well, and they're excited about him as a potential player. Spinazzola feels like he's the kind of player that might thrive if he can stay fit. Lukaku was the man that Conte wanted to lead the line. He got him, and he's also got a bit of Highland flair in Scott McTominay and Billy Gilmore as well. Out go Leo Ostergaard, Jesper Lindstrom, Jens Kajust, Nathan, who just didn't succeed in replacing Kim, Diego Demme, who's been in and out for about 5 years. Zielinski's a big one, and obviously Victor Osimhen ends up going to Galatasaray after the window shuts in both the rest of Europe and in Saudi Arabia. Wild to think that 12 months ago, even at the start of the summer, if you said that Victor Osimhen would end up at Galatasaray at the end of the transfer window, people would have been calling for the men in white coats, right? Like they would have been like, that man's gone insane. But here we are. Look, last year was a disaster, unmitigated disaster for Napoli. 3 coaches, just the team not functioning in any sort of possible way and really struggling after Spalletti went. They have put all of their faith in Conte. And that whilst the first game of the season was, again, a disaster, I think what we've seen is the start of something in Napoli where they're going to be able to change this system. They've brought in the right players to stick in the, you know, into a Conte 3-4-3, which looks like what he's going to play. I'm really excited about this. And I think it would be wild to rule Napoli out with this amount of talent and this man in charge, because Conte is a master planner. And when he doesn't have to deal with European football, he has the ability to bring out game plans that can beat almost anybody. And I think that Napoli are going to benefit from that massively this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that you have to say about Conte is that he's obviously had to get to grips with this while the transfer window was going on, and there was still so much to be sorted out at Napoli at the time. Like, not, it wasn't just Osimhen, it was bringing in Lukaku, and it was sorting out the midfielders and knowing who was coming and who was going. And he didn't have any midfielders on the bench in their last match, and he was clearly frustrated by the transfer rules. And he said himself, he's like, I've been working with players who I knew weren't even going to be at the club, and I can't get the new players in that I need to work on my systems. So they've come through the first three games of the season with 6 points in the bag. And I think you take that from those first three matches. I don't think it really matters where the 6 points have come from. So you can kind of write off the Hellas Verona one because they've made up for it by beating Bologna and Parma. And that was all that was important for right now because he hasn't had the time and the personnel to actually implement what he wants to implement. And now we will start to see it come through. He said against Parma, like, that was our heart. Like, we showed the heart to come through it. It's a difficult, it was a difficult win, but they showed it. And Lukaku is somebody that you really need to get off to a good start. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And for, to have him instantly kind of regarded as a hero for, well, getting them back into the game and giving them a platform to complete the comeback is extremely important. I think Lukaku will do really well at Napoli, especially under Conte. And I actually give them a better chance of running into close than I do Juventus, just based on my hunch. Maybe it's the Conte factor. I don't know. There's just something about it that I think I quite fancy. I mean, it's going to certainly be a big improvement on last season. But yeah, I've got a feeling that Juve don't quite make the top two, to be honest.
It's interesting because there are players here and some of them have been brought in and some of them have been there for short periods of time and some of them are long-standing servants. But someone like Pasquale Mazzocchi, who joined in January, son of Naples, Neapolitan, rejoined the club in January, got sent off in his first appearance, right wing back. Conte is going to love him. He rumbles up and down the touchline. He's the exact type of wing back that Conte likes. On the other side, if Spinazzola can stay fit, then he's going to love him as well. Buongiorno, I think, could be an absolute revelation. It's centre back, brilliant year at Torino last year. It's interesting seeing Gio Di Lorenzo playing that kind of right centre back role. He's already shown he can get forward from there. Conte will love Anguissa. I have no doubt about that. What Kvara can do in this team, if he's given that ability to run around and ability to have an overlapping fullback around him as well, is going to be exciting. And now that David Neres has joined, I expect him to play ahead of Politano most of the time. On top of that, there's a lot to like about this team. Like, so I can absolutely understand why you'd have them in the mix there. But I also quite like this Juve side, given a fresh breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I've probably been a bit too harsh on Juve there. But I'm just being cautious, to be honest with you. I'd love them to be completely rejuvenated. And the signs are promising, for sure. But I just think it's really hard to implement the number of changes that they need over such a short space of time.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, after the first week, and I like doing these shows a little bit later, because after the first week, when Napoli lose 3-0, you're thinking, God, are we going to have them in? Which bit of the conversation are they going into? Where are they going to fit? But I think we've seen enough already to suggest that they're going to be up and about it under Conte. Yeah. Let's go to Milan, who have played 3-1-0, drawn 2 and lost 1, minus 1 goal difference, drew 2-2 against Torino, lost 2-1 against Parma, and then drew 2-2 the weekend with Lazio. Paolo Fonseca coming in for Stefano Pioli. He was very much not the first choice for either Milan or the Milan fan base. And I think that the knives feel like they're starting to be sharpened for Fonseca already, which is a shame because I think he is a really good manager. They've had a bit of a funny window as well. Rade Krunic left, Kalulu left to Juventus, as we said. Olivier Giroud went off to LAFC. Simon Kjær, who's been there for so long, obviously went off into the sunset. Antonio Mirante, similar vibe. Tommaso Pobega, who played a fair bit last year, went out on loan, and Yacine Adli's gone to Fiorentina. In come Youssef Fofana, Alvaro Morata, Strahinja Pavlovic, Emerson Royal, Alex Jimenez from Real Madrid, and Tammy Abraham on deadline day on loan from Milan in a swap deal, which saw Alexis Salamakers leave and go the other way. So he's gone, but he was also on loan last year. So less loss for Milan in that regard. Tough start, DJ. This is not what Milan wanted, and the fans are making it very clear that this is very much not what they want. There are rumours of a rift already with someone like Teo Hernandez, who was left out of this game against Parma, with Rafael Leao, who came on to make a real difference. But both of them walked away from Fonseca's team talk in the cooling break. Now, that might be a bit of much ado about nothing, but it's clear that this has not started particularly well.
Well, no, it definitely hasn't started very well. I mean, they're 14th in the league. And when we were coming into the season, I was really excited about this AC Milan team and the makeup of it. Genuinely, like, they were one of the teams I was most looking forward to seeing in the early stages. And you get to the first match, Torino at home, the anticipation is there. There's the slight edge of, is this manager really going to be the right man? And you're heading into the final 2 minutes of that game and you're 2-0 down against Torino. And you're thinking, this isn't good. And then an 89th minute goal for Morata starts to give them hope. And then they score an equaliser in the 95th minute to salvage something from that first game. And you're like, okay, that's a huge relief. But then obviously the doubts grow, I mean, about this project. And now you get to it. You're looking back on 3 games into a season in which you're really trying to show what your intent is going to be. And you've got 2 points to show from it. And not too far in the distance now, you can see a Champions League tie against Liverpool. And then straight after that, a derby with Inter Milan. So the next fixture against Venezia really is a big one for AC Milan kind of really make themselves known in this season, because we haven't seen an authoritative performance from them yet. And we haven't seen a positive result from them yet. They need to get it before they get to those next 2 games.
Yeah, it's a hard one to call because, you know, actually quite a lot of this Milan side, you expect it to be pretty similar to last year. They haven't lost loads of players. You're thinking, oh, they were, you know, part of the heartbeat. You know, yes, there were some stalwarts in that list of people leaving, but you kind of look at it and think, you know, even with Giroud, who was obviously excellent for a long time for them, there have been two pretty sensible replacements in Morata and Tammy Abraham coming in there to make a difference. You're thinking this squad should be, you know, stronger, really, than what it was last year. And yet the start of the season has been pretty dreadful. So, I mean, I thought it was best to leave Milan in the conversation for title contenders, but I'm already starting to have my doubts about that. And I think that when I'm kind of looking at it and thinking, have they got enough over the course of a season? You know, you're already starting to think, oh God, how long's Fonseca got if this doesn't turn around?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think how I would have ranked this coming into the season. Would I have had them ahead of Juve? Obviously, it would have been difficult to know because the transfer window wasn't closed, but I certainly had them on a par with Juve of what I would expect of them across this season. And now, if I was to, given the teams that we've just talked about so far here, I'd have Inter at quite a clear number one right now as my rank to expect to go on and to win this league. And then I'd probably have Napoli, then Juve, and I'd have Milan in fourth, just out of that ranking. But as you're watching it right now, you're not actually expecting them to even come fourth. So that's the kind of bridge that they've got to build in this early stage of the season. They've got to use this international break to get to grips with what they've got coming up because, yeah, they really are in for a tough spell. As I say, like not only those 2 games against Liverpool and Inter, but they've also got Bayer Leverkusen, of course, coming up in the Champions League as well. This is a really testing time for Fonseca, and he's got to get it right quickly or there will be a proper section of that fan base turning on him. And there's already, as you say, murmurs of it, but you don't want it turning too heavy so early on to a season.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I mean, I wasn't quite sure where to draw this line. We always said we do title contenders in part one and then European challenges in part two. Mm. To be honest, right now, it feels like Milan should probably be in the second part of this conversation. And maybe Atalanta, who we're going to open up part two, should have been in the first part because whilst they haven't had a great start either, they feel a little bit more settled at the very least than Milan do. But we're going to talk about them at the start of our European challenges section after the break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where we're talking all things Serie A. And it's time to move on to our challenges in these European spots. Atalanta, Dean, might have felt like this was an opportunity for them to climb higher than that, for them to challenge for the title. But a 4-0 loss to Inter on Friday night has kind of put paid to a lot of those aspirations, I think, in the press, at the very least in Italy. They started off with a really good 4-0 win against Lecce, and then they were turned over 2-1 by Torino, and then obviously that Inter result. It's been a busy summer. Obviously, Tain Koopmeiners was the headline exit moving over to Juventus. But number one, Juan Musso obviously departed also for Atletico Madrid. Alexei Moranchuk, who's featured at various times, made the move from Atalanta to Atlanta, which is fun in many ways. Hans Hatterborn left, El Bilal Touré left, Emil Holm headed off, and Mitchell Backer as well. In came Matteo Retegi from Genoa, who had a great season last year. Raul Bellanova from Torino. Again, I think he got 12 assists from right wing back last year. So you'd imagine that Gasperini is going to love him. Ben Godfrey turned up. Ibrahim Sulemana, Nicolo Zaniolo, which is going to be absolutely intriguing. It's a reclamation project that if Gasperini can do that, then is there anything he cannot do? Brescianini is a really exciting player. Juan Cuadrado's come in as depth. Lazar Samardzic has been touted with a big move for ages and finally got that shift away from Udinese. Odilon Kasunu from Bayer Leverkusen and Rui Patricio has come in to cover that goalkeeping absence. Look, brilliant season, obviously, for Atalanta last year. They won the Europa League. It was incredibly exciting. They finished fourth in the league. I mean, that's about as good as it's ever got, I think, from an Atalanta perspective. But it does feel that with Scamacca injured early on and with Teyn Koopmeiners forcing a move out of the club, that things aren't quite as rosy as they were last year.
Yeah, exactly that. And I mean, you look back on the Inter Milan game, they had one shot on target across that game, Atalanta, which is kind of worrying. Maybe what's more worrying is that Inter Milan had four shots on target and scored four goals. One of them obviously an own goal, so it's not the complete story, but it's not ideal, is it? I mean, you consider where we were last season and who they're coming up against this term. Atalanta, as you say, did finish fourth. So they've got to have some optimism that that can happen again. And it was a very tight battle, obviously, but themselves finishing 2 points behind Juventus, but only a point ahead of Bologna. So this is kind of part of what we're talking about at the start, how you really don't know what to expect season to season and who manages to retain the form and the levels of performance that were there. Now, when they managed to hold on to Ederson in midfield, I thought that was massive. You talk about all the transfer upheaval. There was a few teams looking at Ederson and it was one that I was trying to stay pretty closely tuned into because I was convinced that he was going to end up going somewhere in the Premier League this summer. And that would have been massive, I think, for Atalanta if that would have happened as well. But in the end, they've managed to at least retain him. And I think that that's going to be key. But yeah, it's all about really how do they react to what's just happened. I mean, back-to-back defeats when you're three games into a season and looking to establish yourself as being among the top four or five teams again to get into the Champions League for the following season is not ideal. And it's also inconsistent, isn't it? Like to win 4-0 on the opening day, to lose your third game 4-0 and have a narrow defeat in between. I mean, you really can't read too much into what the real version of this team even is. All we know right now is they sit mid-table. They've got a goal difference of minus one. Their team has been destabilised. And it's all about the manager now, really implementing a strong mentality for how they are able to react to this early setback, which is what it has to be seen as, for a tough couple of games coming up. Obviously, the Champions League, as I say, getting off to a start soon. Those games coming in September, from mid-September. And Atalanta have been drawn to play Arsenal first up. So their next Serie A game is like 4 days before that. It's against Fiorentina at home. That is a huge fixture. But Arsenal at home in the Champions League in this new format is extremely glamorous, extremely exciting. And it's all about striking the balance here. But they need to obviously just restore some credibility and pride and confidence in that first game back against Fiorentina.
Yeah, I mean, look, a couple of youngsters in this squad at the moment because it feels like there are, you know, some key points missing. We're seeing the likes of Shada Ketelara, who was made permanent over the summer. Ademola Lookman, who at one point looked like he was trying to force a move out of the club, end up staying. As those players start to feed back into things, I imagine it will get better. I'm quite excited about seeing Ben Godfrey at right centre back in a Gasperini system, to be honest, because I think that's probably a position that really suits him. He was sort of a halfway house between a right back and a centre back. He's got that pace, and I think that's actually quite a smart pick up from Atalanta in that regard. I think they're going to obviously have to work out who's going to play a left wing back for the time being. But they have a lot of talented players in these forward positions that they're going to have to work out who plays where at, you know, at all given times. But I do think there's the basis here of still a very solid squad. And with Gasperini in charge, I'd be very, very surprised if Atalanta finished anywhere below fifth. Like, I think that there is probably a top three starting to form. And then you come out of that and you're starting to think, okay, where are Milan? Where are Atalanta? Can someone else push into that conversation at this point? But it all feels a bit up in the air. And I think that's what's so exciting about Serie A right now. And I'm sure it's not. If you support one of these teams, if you're a diehard Atalanta fan, if you're a diehard Roma fan, Lazio, Fiorentina, you know, all of these teams, you're kind of looking at and going, I don't know quite where you are right now. But on the whole, I think that Atalanta's, you know, I said it about Inter at the top, and I say it again here, the fact that they have got a sense of calm and that there is a sense of continuity with the manager and a very good manager at that, someone beloved in the game, someone beloved at the club, I feel like Atalanta will work it out. And so I'm not unduly worried about them, even after a trickier start. Let's come on to Roma, because they've had a slightly indifferent start themselves. Started off with a 0-0 draw against Cagliari, then lost 2-1 to Empoli, and then drew 0-0 with Juventus. Busy, busy window here as well. On the way out, we saw Hussein Awa, Leonardo Spinazzola, Ola Solbakken, Rui Patricio, Renato Sanches, Dean Huijsen, Diego Llorente, Romelu Lukaku, Rasmus Christensen, Sardar Azmoun, Tammy Abraham, Chris Smalling, and Max Cambulla. Now, a lot of those players had either been out on loan at times last season or not necessarily part of the first team squad, but it's still a big amount of outgoings. In response, coming in, they've brought in Artem Dovbyk, who was obviously the Pichichi winner, top scorer in La Liga last season. Matias Sule, who was so highly rated, the young Argentine. Enzo Lefebvre, another one, very highly rated young Frenchman. Matty Ryan, coming in as backup goalkeeper. Samuel Dahl, Mario Hermoso, who signed on deadline day as a free agent after leaving Atletico Madrid. Manu Kone from Borussia Mönchengladbach, which I think is a great signing. Saud Abdulhamid and Alexis Salamakers, who's come in from Milan as part of that deal for Tammy Abraham. It's pretty weird in terms of trying to deal with what Roma have got going on in the first couple of games. It's taken a long time for this squad to get completed. And you look at that and look at the amount of deals that went through in the last few days to really dial into that. But it doesn't feel like Roma are at all settled yet. Now, obviously, the Juventus performance was much better. They were much improved. But they don't look at all, Dean, like they've got any of their attacking patterns going yet. And Paulo Dybala deciding to stay towards the end of things is obviously a great thing in terms of having Dybala at Roma, and we love that as just a concept. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, you're also a bit like, does that throw out your Enzo Lefebvre and Matias Sule partnership that you potentially were going to run this season as your, you know, first choice front two?
Yeah, but they've got some amazing options up there, and I actually do like the way that this team is kind of taking on a new look for the new season. I think that having De Rossi continue from last season as well is going to be a positive. I think, you know, when he came into the job, we weren't sure exactly how long he would be in charge for. They made it clear early enough in the summer that he would be able to visualize exactly where this team was heading and had seen enough at the end of last season to gauge where they were at and what would need to be improved. So I think that that's been key. I mean, De Rossi says that he feels like he was born to do this job.
Yeah. You're going to find it more difficult to find a manager who loves his job right now more than De Rossi loves being at Roma, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he was born to kick people, but he says he was born to be manager of this team. But, you know, the passion you're going to see from this man, he will feel like kicking people as this season wears on, because he is so committed to making a success of this. And that's probably why I give it a pretty high chance of success. But I always have this in football where I'm concerned when there's too much emotion attached, because you just, I mean, to just take an example of the complete opposite, say Arne Slot goes into Liverpool, right? And you see that how his controlling demeanor and manner and fresh eyes on the situation kind of calms everybody down and actually seems to evolve the team quite quickly. This is kind of the opposite of that, because he's already in there. He's already embedded in the club already, obviously, in terms of their history. But he's also got a lot at stake here and is desperate to succeed. So I am kind of concerned about that. But I think the one thing you'll have about this Roma team is that they'll be difficult to beat. I mean, that's what he's going to be all about, right? And you look across the season already. I mean, the Empoli one will probably still be niggling away at him, because that's not a game that you would be expecting to be trailing 2-0 in, and they've managed to, well, I'd say restore some credibility by getting, giving themselves a chance in the game by coming out of it with 2-1. But ultimately, they've got to move forward and try to set the stall out here for what this rebuild is and how quickly they can actually assert themselves on trying to get among the top five. I don't think they'll make the top five is my like immediate take on it. Like if I'm forced to make a decision on it, I'll just be like, no, that they just won't cut it. There'll be too many flaws in the process as to this point. But that doesn't mean I don't think De Rossi can achieve something here. I just think it does need patience, but that means that he's got to be patient with these players that he's kind of bring together as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really do like some of these signings. I think Manu Kone is a massive one. And one of our patrons, Jill, we were talking about this on Monday's postbox about Roma, and she described the midfield as glacial ahead of Manu Kone's arrival. And I really enjoyed that as a description because also it was incredibly correct. But Manu Kone adds a real dynamism in there. And I think that once they get this front three to click, and I'm not quite sure exactly what it's going to look like. We've seen Sule and Dybala behind Dovbik. Whether Lefebvre gets a run out in that kind of space as well is yet to be seen. But I do think that once those three start to click, the attacking patterns will start to make some sense from a Roma perspective. And that's got to be seen as a positive, I think, right now. Dovbik, obviously, absolutely electric for Girona last year, does a lot of things right. Hasn't quite looked at home yet, but I think that it will come. And I think there'll be a moment where Dovbik clicks and Roma absolutely roar into gear. If that is early enough in the season, I can see them challenging for a Champions League place. If it doesn't click until January, you can see them struggling to kind of finish in that top five, as you say. So yeah, a lot of turnover, a lot of bodies in and out at Roma, but I am excited for them. I do enjoy that you said, I quite like the new look. I like the new look in terms of players. What I don't like is the new look in terms of kits, because how on earth have they managed to get these Roma kits so wrong? Like, It's so easy. Roma have such iconic, beautiful colours. The Giallo Rossi, that really deep red and the yellow. Instead, they look like someone's got the shade wrong on the red and the yellow is sort of brown. It's bizarre how they've managed to wreck this. I'm very angry about it. And I think they must be punished for managing to release this bad a kit. But yeah.
The adaptation process here is a lot, isn't it? You've got to adapt to this new kit. And you've also got to adapt to Dovbik. Dovbik's been getting a fair bit of stick so far.
The expectation to trap the ball.
Yeah, but he was so good last season, right? I love him. I think he's great. But this is the problem. And when this deal went through, I was like all for it. I was like, what an amazing signing. But the frustration you're already seeing there, and because the expectation was so high, he's not going to get too long before this is going to be considered to be a failed signing as such. That's how kind of high the bar is being set for him. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes him to get properly up and running.
Yeah, I'm saying. Right, let's flip to the other side of Rome, where Lazio have started in incredibly inconsistent fashion. Played 3-1-1, won 1, drawn 1, lost 1, plus 1 goal difference. Just a bit of a strange start from their perspective. And look, it's been a bit of a strange summer. Igor Tudor only took over in March, and it seemed to be working pretty well. You know, it felt like he'd given Lazio a boost after the Maurizio Sarri era. He lasted 3 months, and then he fell out with the management and he was removed and he was replaced by Marco Baroni, who was the Hellas Verona coach last year. So this is a bit of a strange one. It feels like Lazio are kind of biding their time a little bit before they appoint a new, you know, head coach of someone of kind of Sarri's caliber, right? Where you expect them to have that moment. Baroni feels like a bit of a holding gap. Now, maybe he surprises us all. And I think he's a perfectly decent manager. I don't know if he's going to be able to lift them from where they were last season, any higher up the table. And it's been a bit of a big window in terms of losing the old guard here as well. Obviously, we saw Sergei Milinkovic-Savic leave last year for Saudi Arabia. This summer, it's been Luis Alberto, who's been there for ages, Felipe Anderson, who has been there for a couple of years now as well after leaving West Ham, Daichi Kamada, who's more recent, but, you know, a fellow sort of an impact last year, and Ciro Immobile. It's the big one who's left. The man who is Lazio's all-time record goal scorer, who had scored so many goals. Yes, he was starting to hit the wrong side of his career in terms of peaks, but still having him there meant that they felt they could rely on someone. And Danilo Cataldi, who's been a big part of the midfield for quite some time as well. He's off to Fiorentina. Baroni has hunted around the bottom of Serie A for a lot of his sort of big signings. He signed Tijani Noslin from his old club, Verona. And he also signed Lum Chuana from Salernitana, who were relegated. They brought in a few more. Bulidia came in. He's supposed to replace the goals of Immobile. Not convinced. Fesaya Delibashiru has come in after a couple of years in Turkey. Gaetano Castrovilli was excellent for Fiorentina for a number of years, but a little bit injury prone in the middle. He comes in midfield. Nuno Tavares, who had a really, really good signing time at Marseille the last couple of years on loan from Arsenal. He comes in to play wing back, and Samuel Guijo comes in as well from Marseille, who plays centre back. So busy as a summer for Lazio. I think the squad feels weaker than last year. I feel like the manager feels weaker than last year. And it now just feels like they are in a place where I don't really buy exactly what they're doing. And look, Peroni's been around for 24 years. He started his managerial career in 2000, and he has sort of bounced around the lower leagues until he eventually worked his way up to Hellas. This feels like a massive step in a massive summer of transition. And I'm just really struggling to see Lazio pulling up any trees.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's not really much scope for a drop-off here from Lazio. They finished seventh last season, which was the final Europa League qualification spot. And they only did that by 1 point ahead of Fiorentina. They also only scored 49 goals last season. Fiorentina got 61. So we're talking about replacing goals like that. They can't afford to fall off in that respect. So they're kind of just hanging in on kind of the border of this European elite, if you like. And they are in the Europa League this season, so they've still got to contend with that at the same time. I think Lazio are up against it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, they don't look great. They've had some interesting results, and it's not been as bad a start as I potentially predicted. But yeah, they haven't set the world on fire, and I'm not completely convinced that a lot of these signings are going to be the ones that push them onward. So we shall see. I mean, look, talking of Fiorentina, they've had almost the opposite start. Played three, drawn three, zero goal difference, one all against Parma, nil against Venezia, and two all against Monza. Now that sounds, I think, better than it actually is. Fiorentina have had a rancid start to the season. And when we talk about the potential relegated clubs later, I think you'll see potentially why. Parma, Venezia, Monza is a very soft landing for new manager Raffaele Palladino, and he has failed to beat all three of them. Now, he hasn't lost any of them either, but it's also taken some pretty dramatic turnarounds in Europe to even get them into the Conference League, a competition that they've got to the final of twice in a row, losing both finals, obviously, but at least they've been there and about it. Palladino came in from Monza. He did a really good job. He took over and got them, moved them up the league and made sure that they stayed safe. Monza were kind of the surprise package for a couple of years, had some really impressive performances. Palladino has got a good reputation. He's pretty set in the way he plays. He plays a 3-4-2-1, but they've had a bit of a summer of change as well. Nikola Milenkovic, who's been the kind of heartbeat of the defence for so many years, moved off to Nottingham Forest. Nico Gonzalez has gone to Juventus. As we've said, that is not going to be popular. Giacomo Bonaventura, Alfred Duncan and Gaetano Castrovilli all left from the midfield, as well as losing the loanees from last year, Artemelo and Maxime Lopez. And then Mbala and Zola and Andrea Belotti both left up top. So change kind of across the board. From a Fiorentina perspective, Marin Pongracic came in. He's had a good run in Serie A now, and I feel like that's a sensible manoeuvre coming in from Torino. Moise Kean has come in up top and actually been very impressive in his first couple of performances, I thought, although I don't think he's going to score all that many goals. Amir Richardson's come in midfield. Albert Goodmanson and Andrea Colpani are going to be expected to be the creators in those two behind the striker, I think. Matias Moreno is a young South American who we don't know loads about yet. Yacine Adli came in from Milan. I think that's an interesting one. Eduardo Bove comes in centre midfield. It's all change in the middle there. And Danilo Cataldi, Robin Gersens to play in that wing back role, and David De Gea and Nicolas Valentini. So lots of business. Fiorentina have started the season pretty dreadfully. It's going to take some time for Palladino's methods to set in and to come to fruition. I'm quite excited by some of these signings, Dean, but generally it does feel like this is a Fiorentina side that could really go either way. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see them finish 12th. I equally wouldn't be surprised if this all clicked, if they finish 5th.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great because they've played teams that they should be beating on paper. So that's where you would have to gauge it. And while I said, you know, let's see who can't afford a drop-off in terms of goals scored, well, as we get to this stage, they've actually scored twice the amount of goals that Fiorentina have got so far. So they could be throwing that straight back in my face and saying, well, we're doing it at a better rate than they are. So there is that to think about. But you would have to assume that Fiorentina start getting their act together pretty quickly. Their next two games, you know, Atalanta and Lazio are pretty huge in terms of where they start to show they could be heading.
Yeah, I mean, they're a funny old fish right now. So hopefully the international break gives Palladino some time to actually settle on this. But it does feel like a big window, especially losing Nico, who's been really, really impressive for Fiorentina over the last couple of years in terms of picking up big goals.
Yeah.
I think they look less of a goal threat than they have been of late. So, and you know, obviously that change with Italiano out and Palladino coming in is interesting. Final one in this segment is Bologna, where Vincenzo Italiano has ended up. Now, they've started quite iffy as well. Drew 1-1 with Udinese, lost 3-0 to Napoli, and then drew 1-1 with Empoli. They've obviously lost Xerxes to Manchester United, Riccardo Calafiori to Arsenal, Alexis Salamakers has left, and, you know, end of loan, and Victor Christiansen as well, end of loan. So they're the big two, right? Xerxes and Calafiori leaving. In their place, Thijs de Linge has come in from Toulouse. He's a player that I've loved for a long time. Regular listeners will know that. But this is his first big opportunity to step up, and him getting a Champions League opportunity is massive for Thijs de Linge, I think. Nicolò Cambiaghi, I'm not convinced by. Emil Holm, in a similar way. He's been okay, kind of wherever he's gone, without setting the world on. Via Martin Ehrlich come in. Juan Miranda, left back from Betis. Tomasi Pobega comes in centre midfield from Milan. Samuel Eiling Jr. joined on loan from Aston Villa. Benjamin Dominguez and Nicola Casale. So, look, all change at Bologna. Obviously, the man who took them back to the Champions League, first time, you know, pretty much in living memory, is gone. The star striker is gone. The star defender is gone, and captain Lewis Ferguson is going to be out for the majority of the season, having done his ACL just before Scotland went off to the Euros. So we're in a bit of a strange place, right? Riccardo Orsolini's still there. There's still a couple of very, very talented footballers in here, but this is now a massive task for Italiano to try and steer this squad anywhere back to nearby, to be honest, where they got to last season. I don't think the Champions League is back on the cards for anyone. But I do think that Bologna will be having a good season if they give a decent account of themselves in the Champions League and also retain European football for next season.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to be weird, isn't it? I mean, you look at the table right now, they're third from bottom. They're actually in the relegation zone. And yet you look at what they've got coming up, and they've obviously got the excitement of this new Champions League stage. And they've got some, well, they've got a couple of English teams coming up, haven't they? They've got Liverpool and Aston Villa among their fixture list. But they've, you know, this was what last season was all about. The problem is you've got these games that you've been handed there, and you've got to somehow retain credibility in Serie A. I think they're going to find it really difficult. And I know I've said that about a few teams, and we're considering these European positions, but that's why I think actually the door might open for another team to move up into those positions across the course of the season. And it should make it more exciting, and it should hopefully give some of those sides like that have had a good start to this season optimism that they could actually crack it and make it the top six.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Torino have had a cracking start, and, you know, they were expected, I think, early doors to really struggle to be in the relegation conversation. And we've seen some very, very impressive stuff from them so far. So it's going to be interesting. We are going to talk about some potential relegation candidates after the break, as well as picking our takes for top scorer and player of the season, signing of the season, all that jazz. Stick with us.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for Jack Collins to go into his element. Jack, dig deep and give us some relegation candidates from Serie A, because this is definitely not my niche, mate. This is yours.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think there's about 10 teams that could get relegated. And so we're in a really strange place. And look, before the season began, I think we'd have Torino in there. I was going to talk about Udinese and Hellas Verona, but both of them have started the season really well as well. So it's quite hard to judge, but I think we'll start with the three promoted sides. Venezia came up, you know, through the playoffs. They have struggled in the opening days of the season. They lost 3-1 in the opener to Lazio, drew 0-0 with Fiorentina, who doesn't? And then they lost to Torino as well. It doesn't feel like they're going to be celebrating, I think, at the end of this season, because their manager got nicked by Torino. And so they've decided to replace him with Eusebio Di Francesco, who got relegated last year with Frosinone. So it's hardly, I think, the world's most inspiring appointment that they've made. But there's a lot that's going to sit here on various key players. Gianluca Busio had a really important role to play last year in midfield. He's not been able to get in there. I mean, they've brought Alfred Duncan to play alongside him because his contract expired with Fiorentina. Yoel Poyampalo was the Golden Boot winner in the second tier last year, and he needs to get back from this injury as soon as possible if Venezia are going to stand any chance of staying up. There are some interesting players coming in here. I think that you look at Oristiano, who joined from Inter. He's someone that might be able to have an effect, but Tanner Tessman leaving, I think, is a big blow for them heading off to Lyon. I'm just not feeling that they're going to have enough to stay out of the relegation mix here. So I'm going to say that Venezia, sadly, even with Drake's investment, potentially are going to struggle. That wasn't God's plan. Right, let's come on to Parma. Look, it's a funny one because Parma feel quite settled in a weird way. And look, I think that you kind of think about Parma and the glory years that Parma have had. And, you know, you think about Gianluigi Buffon in that Parma kit and, you know, Hernan Crespo. This Parma, you know, jersey is such an iconic part of Italian football. So it's great to see them back in the top flight. They've had, you know, an okay start. They drew 1-1 with Fiorentina. They then beat Milan 2-1 and they lost narrowly 2-1 to Napoli. That's a very good start from a pretty tricky opening test of fixtures, I think. And it feels like having won Serie B, they are ready for this. They've been pretty solid. There's players in there who felt they were too good for the second tier, who felt like they were too good, not that they felt that themselves. They felt like they were too good for the second tier. Adrian Bernabe is one of them, who obviously was at Manchester City for a while. He created almost everything last year. I thought he was absolutely brilliant across the course of the season for Parma. And I feel like, despite having a relatively calm summer, they feel like they have made the transfers permanent that they needed to make permanent. They've added a couple of extra depth options in attacking places, and they've added some fullbacks. Parma feel like the most settled. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I spoke about Leganes being the side that felt most settled coming up from the Segunda into La Liga, and that they probably had the best chance. I feel like Parma are pretty similar. Como are the wild card, right? So obviously now managed by Cesc Fabregas, who took over from Asian Roberts, who had done it for most of last year, having now achieved his coaching badges. This was always the plan, but it does feel a bit weird to basically be like, here you go, it's your first chance of managing ever in Serie A after we've been promoted. Now it's been a pretty poor start. They lost 3-0 on the opener to Juve. They drew 1-1 with Cagliari, and then they lost the last game 1-0. Look, they've played all three of those games away from home because they're not sure if their stadium is going to be ready or allowed in Serie A, which is pretty weird, although it is a really beautiful stadium on the edge of Lake Como. And you'd imagine that there's going to be a lot of people clamoring for tickets to see Como once they actually do start playing at home. So they basically need to make it big enough to actually host Serie A games. So that's currently the thing that they're going through. I mean, look, they've brought in some really exciting players. Rafael Varane comes in, which feels like the kind of glamour signing that Como needed. Pepe Reina and Alberto Moreno come in, you know, with experience. And also, so do Andrea Belotti, Alberto De Sena, and Gabriel Stravezza, who all played a lot in Serie A at this point. Look, there's a lot of experience here. Are these players going to be good enough to challenge for Europe? I don't think so. But should they have enough to see them past a couple of the sides that feel maybe a little bit more stale, or like the project has come to an end at the bottom side of this? You'd think that if these players play up to their capabilities, and we know like the likes of Patrick Cutrone are there as well, Como should be okay. But we've also seen in the past that, you know, signing these big names for a side that was just promoted doesn't always work out in the way they want it to. So especially with a rookie manager, I think there's a lot up in the air for Como, but they do look stronger on paper than a lot of the sides around them.
Yeah, absolutely. Good job, mate. Good job in terms of running us down there. Right, what did you want to do to finish? What was the awards we were going to throw up?
Well, I just want to talk about some of the sides that might be in trouble around them.
Okay.
Just, you know, who might kind of be in that mix with the relegated, with the promoted sides. Genoa have had a bit of an indifferent start again. 2-2 draw with Inter, which was a good result. 1-0 win against Monza and a 2-0 loss to Hellas Verona, which is a bad result. Look, I spoke about Albert Goodmanson when I was talking about Fiorentina. He was the creative force behind Genoa's last season, and their goal-scoring threat was Matteo Retegi, who's gone off to Atalanta. And then they lost goalkeeper Joseph Martinez to Inter. So losing three of the key players from last season, your most creative threat, your biggest goal threat, and your goalkeeper is not a pretty sight for anyone. They've put up some sensible players. Vitinha made his loan move permanent. Kony de Winter looks really, really strong at centre-back, coming in from Juve, making that loan deal permanent as well. Alberto Gilardino has done a really good job with Genoa. And I think he is the kind of manager who might be mixing it with some of the serious sides pretty soon. But I am a little bit worried that Genoa won't have enough in terms of squad depth to give him the pieces he needs to put this side together. So keep an eye on them. Cagliari obviously lost Claudio Ranieri at the end of last season, and they've replaced him with Davide Nicola, who famously kept Salernitana up against all odds. He is a famous relegation firefighter. They've drawn 2 and lost 1 of their first 3. Cagliari are going to be absolutely horrible to watch, because Davide Nicola is all about grit and determination and fighting to the absolute end. So they've got some exciting players. Zito Luvumbo came on, and I'm really excited about seeing what he can do, if he can add some goals to his game. He's a real talent, the young Angolan. So keep an eye on him. But they've lost a couple of players who have been pretty crucial. Naitan Nandez has finally gone off to Saudi Arabia. But it's going to be interesting to see how they cope with Davide Nicola instead of Ranieri, whose kind of cult status felt like it was holding them together at points last season. And finally, Lecce, who have actually won one of their first 3. They beat Cagliari, so they're in a better place already. But they are in an odd place because they replaced their manager in March. You might remember this. Their manager was Roberto D'Aversa, and he was sacked after headbutting a Hellas Verona player after full time. They sacked him off the back of that, as you might expect, and replaced him with Luca Gotti, who turned their season around, kept them up, and really put them in a solid position. Switched to a 4-4-2, got them in a really nice place. And I think that Lecce, from a place of pretty weak, you know, standing, might just be all right, because they've signed a few just solid players who feel like they're able to make that step up from Serie B to Serie A. And I think that when you're kind of bringing in a few of these kind of players, Desina Koulibaly, for example, they should have enough. And Nikola Krstović has the potential to, I think, really explode this season. So if Lecce can get him going, then they might just have enough. But just keep an eye on them. And so that kind of wraps up most of it. I would also probably have Monza and Empoli in the mix as well. Empoli in particular, the man they replaced Davide Nicola with was Roberto D'Aversa, who was the man sacked for headbutting Thomas Henry. So I'm not sure how that's going to cope. I'm not sure what they're going to do. He didn't do great until that moment. He then went into a mad fit, and I'm not sure why Empoli have decided to bring him in. But actually, he started quite well. They've won 1 and drawn 2. And Monza might have a little bit of trouble with Alessandro Nesta at the helm as well. I feel like him replacing Palladino doesn't feel like great strength at this point. So they're just the ones to keep an eye on, I think, in the relegation battle. As I said, I would have had Hellas Verona and Udinese in there. And I think before the season, some people would have had Torino in there. But after the starts that all three of them have had, it feels unfair to put them in the conversation. So I'm going to leave them out of this for now, and take back hosting, because I want to know who you think is going to be the top scorer in Serie A this season. Who is going to win the Capocannoniere?
Lautaro Martinez. That's actually that's an out there pick, because he hasn't got a goal yet, mate. So I'm going for an outsider here.
I'm going to say it's one of the three L's. I think you're right. It's Lautaro, Lukaku, or Leao. That feels like a...
Well, it'll probably be Marcus Thuram at this rate, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, Lautaro is the centrepiece. He's Inter's captain. He is going to start scoring goals at some point, I think.
And he finally signed that new contract. Like, exactly. We've been waiting for this for years. And here we are. Lautaro's signed the ting, and he's staying till 2029 now. Since he signed it, hasn't got a goal. But surely that can't continue. So, that, yeah, I just find it impossible to believe. This is a guy that's got almost a goal every other game across his Inter Serie A career, which is like 206 or 207 games deep. He's got a great goal-scoring return, so you just have to assume that it's still there. And even if he's not number one, he's going to end up the season as the number two goal-scorer.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be there or thereabouts. Okay, two more things. Who do we think is going to be the best new signing?
I do think that it's going to be Cope Miners. I do think that that is such a big pull. I love it. I just love it. I think that you're getting someone in that, like what they've done to reform that midfield is going to be magic. It might not happen in like the next month, but by the end of the season, I think that Cope Miners addition is just going to be such a good one.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go to Naples. I'm going to say it's going to be Alessandro Buongiorno, who joined Napoli from Torino. Already pretty highly regarded as a centre-back, and a lot of people thought he was going to start for Italy at the Euros. But Antonio Conte and centre-backs is a partnership made in heaven. I think by the end of this season, we're going to be talking about Alessandro Buongiorno as one of the best centre-backs in the world, never mind in Serie A. So I think Conte takes him to that next level, and I think we see an absolutely monster year from Buongiorno. And that takes us on to player of the season, Dean.
Oh, I mean, it's impossible, isn't it? Well, where's my money going in terms of... This is basically who do I think is going to win the league, because that's where the player of the year is going to come from. And I think... I'm pretty sure Inter Milan do win the league this season. So then it's like, is it coming from Lautaro Martinez? Is he the top scorer and automatically as a virtue of that and winning into the league again? Does he win player of the season? Very possibly. But I want it to be like Calhanoglu or something, to be honest. Like I feel like that's where I want it to be, that he's had a supreme season and that's what's actually sparked the back-to-back titles for Inter.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Inter win it, I would love it to be Nicolò Barella.
I was going to say Barella, but I was like, but there's just no chance that he is the player of the season. It just won't happen.
Maybe not. Look, if Napoli play as well as I think they can under Conte, there's a high chance that Kvara reclaims this title, I think. Like, a lack of European football should keep him fresh, means he should play pretty much every minute in Serie A across the course of this season. And if Spinazzola is there and flying down that left-hand side as the outside back, and Kvara is used in a front three, but slightly more inside, you can see those spaces opening up as the overlaps fly past. You can see him creating a load. You can see him scoring a load. I can see Kvara winning it, even if Napoli don't win the title.
Wow.
So I'm going to say that Kvara might have the season of his life. And look, at the start of this summer, it looked like he was like, I don't want to play under Conte. Yeah. He was worried he was going to be used as a right wing back at points. But
he might be.
He's not going to be used as a right wing back. We know that now. He's going to be in this front three with David Neres and with Romelu Lukaku. And I think this could be pretty special from both Napoli and Kvara.
That would be fun. I prefer your pick massively. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day.
Good research, mate. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been your Serie A preview show here on Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And I can confirm that we have a surprise for you later in the week with the first of our new shows starting on this channel. It's going to be not Dean and I, but actually an old face returning, Sam Tai, hosts a new podcast on Ranks FC. Oh,
comeback. Don't call it a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback. The prodigal son returns. He's going to be hosting a show called The Truth with old friend of the pod, Doogie Critchley. It's going to be coming out on Friday morning. I'm very, very excited. It's going to be finding a balanced view on some of the most controversial topics in world football. And the first one is going to be on Chelsea's transfer window, all about the intricacies of what went down at Stamford Bridge. We're going to put a little show out, a little teaser show, talking about what the concept is and explaining it for all of you. That's going to come out on Thursday. And the main show, The Truth, will be out on Friday for its debut edition. So I'm very, very excited to share that with you. Recorded it earlier today with the two boys. All very exciting. But for now, I will leave you with that little tidbit, and we will see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy, Rank Squad. Peace.